Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. A little bit later than usual, but you know, we wanted to make sure we had the proper time to go through all the stuff, because Sandra was away gallivanting with her family in Colorado, very high up in a mountain, and I was in Glasgow, where one minute it's raining, the next minute it's sunshine. How are you, Sandra? Welcome to the Retro Raw Rundown, which you co-host here on Inside the Ropes.
This is a show I co-host here on Inside the Ropes. Hi, Kenny. Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. I'm back in Michigan, so I'm, you know, breathing normal oxygen again, which is good. I got used to the altitude after like a few days in Colorado, but it was a lot. It kicked my ass at first. But yeah, it was lovely to have a vacation away with my family and get to hang out with my nephews and see some really pretty mountains and scenery, and got to try Breckenridge Distillery and go to a brewery and all the things I wanted to do in Colorado. So it was a very successful trip. I'm back in Michigan. I can't say that I'm glad to like be back at work in Michigan, but you know, it's nice to be home.
There you go. And we also are like, you know, like people say, you know, the end is near, the world could be ending.
Sometimes I hope it does.
I really enjoyed Monday Night Raw. In 2019.
I know.
Like, I legitimately was like, that was a really good episode. And we'll talk about it tomorrow.
Like, I was watching it fairly late at night, and I was like, I was getting kind of tired. It was about 1 a.m. And because when I was in Colorado, I was operating on like normal human schedule time, I'm trying to keep that up. And so I've been trying to like get up before noon every day, which for me, you know, is an effort. And I was like, I should go to bed soon because I'm getting really tired, and I'm trying to do that thing where like I get tired and I just go to bed instead of staying up for another 3 hours. And then I didn't want to switch off Raw. And I was like, what is happening to me that I don't want to switch off Raw? I am curious to see what happens. And that hasn't happened in a long time. So it was kind of refreshing in the year of our Lord 2019 to enjoy an episode of Monday Night Raw. I mean, there was some atrocious stuff we'll get into on Wednesday as well, but it was not all bad.
Yeah, and the ratings are up. More teenagers were watching. Heyman's got the book. It's a good time.
Crazy times.
But we're delving back into 1999 here, where we just, this is going to be a big old Patreon plug, so sit back and relax. You can go to patreon.com/insidetheropes, where you can subscribe for bonus content, from bonus articles from Finn Martin, bonus podcasts with me and Finn. You get the Power Slam podcast 24 hours early. You get an overrun where we talk about old issues of Power Slam, bonus stuff. Sandra and I do a weekly NXT review. We do retro pay-per-view reviews. Finn and I do a retro heat. There's the Pot of Thunder. Plethora of stuff, but included in there is the 1999 King of the Ring review, which we covered, which will not give away what we thought of it. I mean, you'll kind of get it from this podcast, but in The Observer, the King of the Ring 1999 had a 7.7%, giving it a thumbs in the middle, 12.6% giving it a thumbs up, 79.7% gave it a thumbs down. So people were not a fan of
that's about what I would expect from King of the Ring 1999. I had to just remember what year it was.
Hard,
but it's interesting, right? Because I know it still feels like 1998 sometimes, and we're halfway through the year. But I think it's not really a surprise that people might have been underwhelmed with the show. And do you think it's because they were underwhelmed with the person who won King of the Ring, or do you think it was the show as a whole? Because I think the show as a whole was just kind of, I am giving away what we thought of it, it was kind of a slog. And also the person winning King of the Ring hasn't really been looking all that great on television leading up to King of the Ring. So I think that may have been a part of it too. Do you think people were underwhelmed with Billy Gunn? Because I knew that he was going to win, so I couldn't be underwhelmed or overwhelmed. It was just,
I was whelmed.
It was what happened. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess like in the Attitude Era, a lot of what kind of takes you through is the stories. And there was like a Rock Undertaker thing. Their chemistry was kind of flat. The McMahon's awesome thing. They really did try. But ultimately, it was just like the King of the Ring tournament, I don't think really clicked for a lot of people. And, you know, the big matches either didn't deliver or went too long. So,
as I'm thinking about King of the Ring 1999, it's not something I said on the pay-per-view review, but I think the way that they're trying to portray Billy Gunn as like an undeserving winner, which they get into on this episode of Raw as well, I think kind of hurt the pay-per-view overall. And instead of like getting super heat on Billy Gunn, it just made everything feel kind of meh. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And, you know, I didn't really realize till I was watching it back, the presentation of Billy Gunn is not good. Like, he is booked to be such a, like, what is it Brian Alvarez calls him? Geeks? He was such a geek.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. Well, let's get into Raw the night after. So, we're coming at King of the Ring. You know, more more often in 1999, the next night you figure out whether a story's going to continue or move on. In 2019, it tends to be like you need like 2 or 3 weeks before you figure out where something's going.
Just need 6 months of the same story over and over and over and over and over.
Yes, exactly. If it doesn't get you the
and
first
over,
month.
And over. And over. And over again.
And over. So we opened the show with Vince McMahon and the corporate ministry coming out. They are giddy. It is a celebration tonight because they own the company again. All is right in their world. The corporate ministry are all on the same page. Vince says it was a night that people will never forget. Shane has a message, says he's going to fire Austin, but he ended up stumbling over his words a little bit. He says that Austin's going to have to be a prelim guy. They talk about the Undertaker's going to be the champion, but he's now going to get to face Triple H the next pay-per-view, which is, you know, makes sense. They're keeping the belt within the faction, no matter what happens.
Didn't they also say, like, Stone Cold was going to be, like, in the opening match, and then he was going to have to take down the ring afterwards?
Yeah, he's going to be a prelim guy, bottom of the pile. He's then going to have to help deconstruct the ring. And then comes the big boss man to his old theme music. I popped so hard for this music.
See, and I've never known the Big Boss Man with this music. I've heard it before, because I know you've played it for me, but I've never known him with this music. So I'm like, ooh, the Big Boss Man has a new theme. And then I remembered, oh, wait, that's actually his old theme from when he was a good guy. And I may have rewound it and just, like, listened to the Hard Time song quite a bit, because it's really, really catchy, and I was happy.
And it will be closing this podcast, just to warn you, ladies and gentlemen.
Of course
it will.
There's
nothing
else. I don't think there's any other option to close the podcast.
The only other option is the mashup with that and Michael Jackson's song Bad, which is incredible.
Which is great. I'm sure we've closed a podcast with that before. We have. I know that sometime in the history of Inside the Ropes we have done that.
Which is the only reason I'm not doing it on this one.
Right, which makes sense. But no, before the Big Boss Man came out, as Vince McMahon is talking about the harmony and the unity within the corporate ministry, right? I was like, but it's not all harmonious in the corporate ministry. What about the Big Boss Man? You beat him up last week and kicked him out of the corporate ministry. That's not harmonious. Before I even knew that the Big Boss Man was going to come out. So I think that just proves that it was kind of effective storytelling, right? With the Big Boss Man coming out to confront them. And I thought he was going to stand tall against the corporate ministry. And he was going to say, hey, fuck you guys for kicking me out. I'm the Big Boss Man and I'm amazing. And instead, he just came out and rejoined them.
He did. And, you know, one of the rare instances in the Attitude Era where, like, you know, I say this quite a lot. I think the strength of it is that they are quite tight with their storytelling in terms of, like, you're not really left hanging with a lot of things. Like you know, today you're like, what was in the lockbox? Like, you would have found out for most of the time. But the one thing that they didn't do here, which I'm just going to... So the implication is that the Big Boss Man was the guy who raised the briefcase. That's what we're meant to believe.
Right, because so, I was wondering about that, because you said that we find out who it is on Raw, and they never say it on Raw. Like, I thought that it was, I guess, supposed to be Bossman, but later on in the show, JR's like, I mean, someone was raising and lowering the briefcase, and we don't know who it was, and we never find out, and...
So the idea is it's supposed to be the Bossman, but they just, like, miss that part out of kind of explaining it's him, and it was weird, because, like...
Why does the Bossman even have access to the briefcase?
I mean, was it a fake thing all along, or was that the boss man's way of getting back into their good books?
Because that's what I was wondering. Like, that's the part of the story that didn't make sense. He just joined them, right? Like, he just comes out to his old music, and you think he's going to be the big valiant babyface. And I know that 1999 is all about swerves, brother, but like, it was frustrating to me that he just came out and was like, "I love you guys," and they were like, "Okay, Big Boss Man, you're our pal again." With no explanation, and it wasn't even like how they lampshade it sometimes and they go, haha, like us beating you up was just a ruse to fool Stone Cold Steve Austin or anything like that. It was just like, I love you guys, I'm back. And they were like, cool, welcome back, even though we totally kicked you out and beat your ass last week. Question mark. I don't understand. This didn't make sense to me.
I just needed when they did the reunion to almost be like, you know, like some sort of nod, like, thanks for the briefcase, like a wink or something, like just something we go, okay, now I get it. He has.
Or like for Bossman to explain, like when he comes out, and then to be like, I love you guys so much that I was the one that helped you out in the match, or
yeah, so we needed to explain something like that. They didn't explain it, which was a fail.
Because I was almost hoping by the end of the show that Bossman would, like, I don't know, turn on the corporate ministry again or something and be like, haha, like you thought I was on your side, but I'm really not. And I'm going to be a great person now, even though anything I know that he goes on to be dastardly boss man very, very soon. So it's not like I thought he was going to like have this big babyface run, but I don't know.
I just wanted any excuse to hear the Hard Times theme tune every week.
Exactly. I wanted that. And plus, I'm a big Boss Man fan, so I wanted to have
One
his story
sentence.
be a little bit more coherent.
Sandra in 2019. I'm a big Boss Man fan. Like,
Oh,
it just makes me laugh. It's funny. So
I am.
Boss Man's now back in the corporate ministry, the warm bosom of his buddies. Shane says that, payback's a bitch and blah, blah, blah. Here comes Austin. Crowd go absolutely batshit crazy insane for him. He says that what happened to King of the Ring was bullshit, but he knew he would get screwed if they had won. So he took out an insurance policy, and it was a new contract. So the last thing he did as CEO was give himself a new contract, give himself more money. He took out the clause that he couldn't assault Vince. And he also booked himself a title match, knowing that he might get screwed. Asks for a hell yeah, fans go crazy, Vince can't change it. What I thought was clever about this was, like, if you're Austin, right, and you're the CEO, I mean, we're having to jump through a lot of sort of hoops of logic here, but, for the purposes of what they're telling us,
Go with it because wrestling.
because of wrestling, if you're Austin, of course you would sign yourself a new contract to protect yourself just in case. And you would give yourself, like, you would do these, and this is, I think, the thing that Austin would do that I think I would like to see some baby faces do today is, like, remember he did the thing when, was it the night after, I think it was the night after Survivor Series. He had made sure that, like, when Shane was kind of like in charge for a couple of weeks when he was a baby face, that he made sure, like, Shane gave him a title shot the night after Survivor Series. And,
Right,
like,
yeah.
so Austin was always like, he always expected they might try and fuck him and would have a backup in case they did, which
Well,
is
and that's very
clever.
consistent with Austin's like DTA, don't trust anybody, cover your own ass type character, right? Because he's always paranoid that someone's going to turn on him or someone's going to be against him because someone usually is, right? And I mean, he has invited that throughout his career by beating up every single person on the roster. So it makes sense that Stone Cold Steve Austin would ensure these provisions in his contract because Stone Cold Steve Austin is not an idiot. And it's kind of nice to see your hero, even if he is kind of a dick, right? Like Stone Cold Steve Austin isn't like the nicest, most valuable baby face in the world, but at least like he is the hero of the people and he's not an idiot and he's not being stupid. So it's easier to get behind him because when people are just naive and idiotic and stupid and all that kind of stuff, it's hard to get behind them because it's like, but you did this. This is your fault. And Stone Cold Steve Austin's looking after himself, and I like that.
Yeah, it was. I liked it as a long-term plot point. It made sense, so I appreciated what they did. So yeah, I guess what do you make of the opening segment? We've kind of got it's a trope that they use a lot in the action. I'm not saying it's a bad trope, but the idea that the McMahon's got the upper hand, they're all happy, but then the babyface has something to come back with, and there's hope, I guess, for the audience for who they want to root for. What did you make of the opening segment and all the things they tried to accomplish?
Yeah, it's a lot of authority shenanigans. The Bossman thing didn't work for me, like I said. When Austin came out, I did like that part of it. If we have to have authority shenanigans, I at least want checks and balances. And I was glad that Stone Cold Steve Austin put those provisions in place before he potentially lost his, CEO-ship or whatever you want to call it, because I mean, he had to know that there were going to be shenanigans and that things would be stacked against him in this match. So, yeah, I like that Stone Cold Steve Austin doesn't look like an idiot. I like the fact that it kind of fits with the segments we saw of him being CEO too, right? Because he was going around during his day in Stanford when, like going around changing Vince McMahon's salary and making Shane's salary the beer budget. I'm real curious to see if that sticks. And, like all of these different things that he was doing. So he was kind of playing around in the corporate structure of the WWF. And so that all seems consistent with what he would have done as CEO. And I thought that was smart. And it's nice to have checks and balances. So it's not just the evil authority figures reigning supreme. And one person just manages to magic it all away, I guess. I was glad that there was internal consistency there, the way that there wasn't with the Big Boss Man story.
Yeah, and then so then we go from that to obviously the story last night was that Steve Blackman had kind of cost Ken Shamrock the King of the Ring tournament because he beat him up on Heat. So we get a weapons match here between Ken Shamrock and Steve Blackman. But then when Blackman comes out, he gets pummeled. Blackman ends up then kicking Shamrock in the head. Shamrock's bleeding from the mouth again. Blackman beats
Because
him.
if he had internal bleeding last night, what the fuck is he doing competing on Raw? He's
Yeah,
an
who
insane
cleared him?
person, right?
So basically, yeah, he ends up beating up Shamrock with a kendo stick, and Blackman leaves.
I mean, this is the company that let Mick Foley be on Raw the next night after falling through a cell.
This is true. So I guess I'm going to try and take my absolute biases of how shit Steve Blackman is out of it and ask you, you know, the idea here is Ken Shamrock is one of the most over babyface badass characters, and the attempt here is to transfer that heat onto Steve Blackman from the last two nights. How effective has that been for you?
I mean, Steve Blackman is a void of charisma, and I love him for it, but, like, he is a void of charisma. I think it makes me like Ken Shamrock still. I still like Ken Shamrock a whole lot. It doesn't make me, like, loathe Steve Blackman or think he's super dastardly, I guess, just because Steve Blackman's not very good at emoting and being dastardly. But it works better for me than when Steve Blackman's trying to be a valiant babyface, I guess. Like, I just don't think that Steve Blackman is objectively very interesting. I'm always going to have love in my heart for Steve Blackman, the way that you will always have vitriol in your heart for Steve Blackman. But I don't know that the story is the most compelling.
I feel like Kali, for example, the reason I love the great Kali is because he's so bad that it's lovable.
That's how I feel about Steve Blackman and his motionless face.
But I feel like he's got too much of a good physique and he's just too bland. Whereas, like, for me with Kali can't really walk, he can't really wrestle, and, like, he can't really do a lot of human tasks. So, like, therefore the love began, you know, when he won the world title, he held up the wrong way around. You know, when he got the Kali kiss cam. He was in an ad for cement where he fell through the floor. I mean, love is going to come out of me for that man.
Of course.
But, you know, Steve Blackman, I mean, just...
Steve Blackman had glowing nunchucks.
I just want the security from Montreal to press charges for him jumping the barricade. Or I don't know if it was in Montreal, because he was in the... was it Montreal Survivor Series where he debuted, or did he debut a couple weeks before and then he was in the... eight-man tag league team.
He debuted a couple weeks before because he jumped the barricade, and instead of getting charges pressed against him and going to jail, he got a spot at Survivor Series.
He got a contract.
Like, honestly, all Retro Raw has taught me as a fan, if I ever wanted to jump the barricade, was do it. This company will hire you. Yeah. Which is not a good message to send, because that's a terrible idea, and no one should actually do it in real life.
Up next, though, on the show, we got Michael Cole interviewing the new King of the Ring. Now, Michael Cole, who is on Monday Night Raw, which is on the USA Network, this show at this point started at 9 p.m. So we're like 9:30 p.m. Michael Cole says, "Ladies and gentlemen, the 1999 King of the Ring, B.A. Billy Gunn." You can say the word ass, Michael. You go on to say that Jerry Lawler has anal bleeding in about 13 years. So you can clearly say... Anyway, so Mr. Ass comes out. He's got the tag belt.
Well, I mean, Mr. Ass did call Michael Cole to task, right? And Michael Cole is supposed to look like kind of a geek here, right? Like, he is, because that's kind of his whole deal. Like, he's kind of that dorky backstage interviewer. And so, of course, he doesn't want to say ass. It's the same way Jim Ross doesn't want to say ass on commentary. It's the same thing. But, you know, I mean, I kind of liked that Billy Gunn was able to be like, none of this BA stuff, badass, that's what I am. And, like, he does not sound super badass in this interview. He really doesn't. But at least it, you know, it gave Billy Gunn a chance to kind of, like, shit on Michael Cole, which I don't mind nearly as much as when other wrestlers are shitting on wrestlers, because, like, Michael Cole can be used as fodder here. He's an interviewer.
Yeah, he's a geek. So, basically, this really worked for me. So Billy Gunn comes out, he's King of the Ring. Michael Cole says, you know, Bradshaw later on is coming to get his property back.
Because Billy Gunn thinks that he is the tag team champions because he won that trios match that one time.
And somehow there's now a match to determine whether he becomes the tag team champions.
A singles match, yes.
No, but, like, if he won, is he the two champions, or is it him and Farouk?
See, I was wondering the same thing. I was like, does Billy Gunn then take Bradshaw's place? But they were talking about, like, if he wins this match and is the champion, then he would need a partner. And who would his tag team partner be to be the tag? So I think that in that match later on that we'll discuss, I think the implication was that if Billy Gunn won the match against Bradshaw, then he would become the tag team champions and just bestow upon a partner the honor of being the co-champion with him? Question mark
Yep,
also.
there's a lot of questions.
I mean, people like there is a lot of internal consistency in 1999. There's also a lot of question marks in 1999. I never want people to say that like 1999 was super tight and everything was perfect. And no, there was some of this stuff too.
There was. I think the one of the things that's good compared to, is there's always a lot to talk about, you know?
Yes, things happened.
Whereas like sometimes now we just like skip Raw for
Yeah.
and there's an hour
Which
more
was
of it.
the blissful part about last night's Raw in the year of our Lord 2019. I think I texted you. I was like, I feel like at least three or four things happened on Raw.
Yeah, at one point I was sitting watching Raw last night and I was like, oh, here comes Undertaker, no explanation. And then I was like, he gave like half of an explanation. That's
Half
like
of one? Yeah, that's more than I expected.
that's like half more than he usually does. Oh God. Anyway,
Our bar's so low that we're excited about like minimum effort, but you know what? I'll go with
yeah,
it.
did you reference the feud 3 years ago? Oh my God.
You sort of almost halfway did. I can read into it. Good enough for me right now.
Yep. So Billy Gunn then calls Andy out that wants to come out and face him. Out comes Triple H in China. China's got the assless chaps on. Always a winner for me. And then Triple
My
H.
favorite thing about the assless chaps is that, like, from the front, when you see her, like, she wears kind of that, like, chastity belt looking bikini bottom. So it's just, like, really shiny, like, right over her vagina.
Why not? You know? Just
She looks amazing.
so Triple H comes out and he calls Cole over. He tells Billy Gunn to ease down. This is all about business. It's about his financial future. And he says, you know, have you noticed that those royalty checks that you're getting for DX are a lot lower than they used to be? And he's like nodding. And he said, well, Road Dogg and X-Pac claim to be the sole proprietors of DX, which, you know, logically they should be because these two are the ones that left and betrayed them. But anyway,
Yeah, because they're the only ones left in DX. Like, that was Triple H and Billy Gunn's doing, not Road Dogg and X-Pac.
but Triple H then, you know, goes off in the fans and he's like, you know, we carried their dead ass. But, you know, the. Triple H is busy now going after the
I
title,
mean,
but
I would
he.
beg to differ. I would beg to say that X-Pac has carried everyone in DX, X-Pac in China, but whatever.
So Triple H says, you know, I'm going after the title, so I've got stuff to do, but, you know, China and you should go after DX and get back what's ours. And Billy Gunn kind of agrees. So they're basically going to go after X-Pac and Road Dogg. And then he's like, you know, please hit that also financially rewarding music. This really worked for me. Like, I like the idea of like the battle of the DXs. You know, these guys in China and Billy Gunn and Triple H have all left DX for greater pastures, but now they're such arseholes that they want the fucking royalties from it. Like, they
Yeah, like
deserve that.
they wanted to leave the group and be not a part of the group at all. They don't want to be part of DX. But now they also just don't want Road Dogg and X-Pac to have the DX name or royalties because they're pricks, which is fine. Like, it did occur to me during this portion of the program that, like, I've actually gotten properly into DX recently. And I just kind of realized I think I'm way more into DX when Triple H is not a part of it. I think that's the helpful part of the equation for me. Because, like, Road Dogg and X-Pac, I'm not the biggest Road Dogg fan in the world, but I'm kind of into their partnership and I find them compelling. And even, like, when Billy Gunn was still part of it and everything, I was like, oh, yeah, like, I think this is a DX I can get behind. I really think Triple H is just the problem.
Well, you know, I think that there's an element of, I don't think, so I spoke to somebody that, I can't remember who it was, but whoever it was, I'm sorry, I forgot the credit. You know, you always say that you think Triple H is the Baron Corbin, right? So I'm going to disagree, because I've been thinking about it recently. I think the reason that Triple H, for me, doesn't feel like Baron Corbin is because Triple H feels like a name, right? Like, there's stuff that he's been attached to, like DX or whatever, or being the King of the Ring. When it mattered, it feels like there's some stakes to what he has won, right? Like, when I remember going to house shows in 1999, where like Steve Austin would face Triple H in the main event, and you felt that you got your money's worth. But you felt you didn't feel shortchanged by seeing him involved, right? Which is why I would say, but somebody else came up with an analogy that I. Somebody said this, and I don't entirely disagree. Baron Corbin is kind of like Steve Blackman, in that you're like,
No.
I get what you're going for, but he's just not that guy. With Baron Corbin, they're like, we want him to be the main event guy. And you're like, oh, he's just not a main event guy. With Steve Blackman, they're like, we really want him to be like a new star. And he's really not. And like, people, like, Steve Blackman, when he wrestles, is kind of like how it is when I watch Baron Corbin wrestle. Like, in the ring, they're kind of the same person for me. They just
I
don't
don't know.
work.
I think Steve Blackman is like better in the ring than Baron Corbin, but charisma-wise, Baron Corbin is miles ahead of Steve Blackman.
Charisma-wise, yes, but
I mean, it's interesting. We just see it differently because, like, if I saw Triple H in a main event, given what I've seen up until this point on Retro Raw, I do feel shortchanged. Like, I don't feel like he's as much of a main eventer as they're making him out to be. I know that he goes on to be that, but, like,
well, I
I'm
also
always
think
trying to
that.
shut off my brain to what happens later on. And, like, he just hasn't done anything interesting for me. And we've been watching it since, you know, since before he won King of the Ring. So we've been watching since he's been Hunter Hearst Helmsley, since he's been no one. So we've really seen his whole ascent. Like, I don't feel like I missed out on a critical piece of Triple H in 1995 or something like that to really gain context to this.
I think the thing that, you know, it's interesting that you say that DX worked better for you without Triple H, because when Triple H leaves DX, because let's remember, initially DX was Shawn Michaels, and
I
Triple
didn't
H
like
was
that
and
one either.
But my point is, Triple H was not, he wasn't really DX, he was the lackey of DX, right? He was the sidekick, he wasn't the leader.
Right.
And then he kind of got shoved into being the leader when Shawn Michaels had to leave. But what's interesting is that Triple H's ascent and him really becoming a major star only happened when he was no longer associated in any way with DX. Like, he has to almost, like, shake off the entire DX thing to then become, you know, what would make him big. And then DX kind of, I mean, I think the Mr. Ass in China against X-Pac and Road Dogg is a really good program, because I feel like everybody's motivation I understand, and it works. And I agree, it works in a better way without Triple H being involved, because in some ways Triple H feels like that, even if you don't like him, his character's motivation would not be this. He wants to be
no,
world
he
champion.
Says it in this promo, doesn't he? He says he has one goal, and that's the World Wrestling Federation Championship. And so that's why he's bestowing the secondary honor onto Billy Gunn, right? Which is such a prick thing to do if you think about it.
It's like a
this
double
like,
prick move, right?
Yeah, it's like Tommaso Ciampa saying, hey, Johnny Gargano, I think you should definitely go for that North American Championship, because obviously I'm the NXT champion, but you can be the North American champion, and then we can both have gold pat you on the head like you're my little puppy, you know? And that's it's kind of the same move that Triple H is doing to Billy Gunn here, but at the same time, Billy Gunn's like, I would quite like some gold. Like, I would quite like some sort of honor. I would quite like these royalties. I would quite like to win another thing. I am the king of the ring. I'm on top of the world, theoretically. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. The storytelling and the motivation and the internal consistency is here, for sure. The segment worked for me, too. I just don't like Triple H, so that doesn't help. Like,
which is good. I mean,
I just
he's
don't
a heel.
Like him.
At least he's a heel,
right?
Now, so you're not like, I'm curious,
and
because
I think he's getting mildly more interesting. I'm interested in everyone else around Triple H way more than I'm interested in Triple H still at this point, and I'm just kind of waiting for him to get more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we get to like September, and you're still like, you don't see anything in him, then I guess you maybe never are going to, right? But like, I feel like he. Because he was always quite a kind of boring element, right? He was never really, like, nobody tuned in for Triple H, but he was always kind of propped up by more interesting stuff. He was propped up by China. He was propped up by Shawn Michaels in DX. He was propped up by the rest of DX. He was always being propped up for a long time. And then he eventually had to go on his own. So we'll see how we get. I guess in the next couple of months, but yeah. So and then
it's just interesting because we've watched Royal Rumble 2000, right? Like a few years back, and I don't remember everything that happens on Royal Rumble 2000 because it was, when did we review that? Was that like 2 or 3 years ago?
I think it was about a year now. I think we were maybe late 97, early 98, so maybe about a year and a half ago.
So yeah, so it's been a while since we've done it, but I know that we get to Triple H, and was that the Triple H Cactus Jack match?
Yeah, the street fight.
Yeah, and so. That seems like a Triple H that's miles different even than what we're seeing here in June of 1999, and that's January. So that's 7 months away? 6 months away? Because it's July now? Like,
I mean,
I'm intrigued.
One of the interesting character studies is, like, if you look at, I mean, right, for everybody who's listened to this, a couple of thousand people that are listening to this, watch where Triple H is right now in June, and then when we get to the Royal Rumble, I mean, that is literally 6 months where they make a main event top heel star. And the way that they do it is they just present him that way. And he gets big wins. And he is an arsehole. And like they're consistent with him. So I feel like consistency, as we'll see in the next few months, is kind of the key to some success for people, you know? And Triple H has said it and then, you know, downplayed it. But Mick Foley really is a big part of Triple H getting to where he was. Because those matches are really important.
100%.
Anyway, so back to the show. So then at the end of the segment, once the DX music hits and Triple H and Billy Gunn are all happy with themselves, The Rock runs down. He tries to beat both of them up. He's peeled off Triple H and sort of held back. So The Rock's pissed because obviously Triple H cost him the WWF Championship. Did the Rock run-in work for you here?
It was fine, yeah. I mean, it was, you know, it was The Rock running in. He's very popular with the people. So
it was consistent
they were
as well,
because
he did just, yeah, you know, jump. Up next, though, is, maybe he is on the same level of boring as Steve Blackman. Chaz tries to cut a promo about, like, he's just a kid from he's a kid from New Jersey who just wants to have fun. He did not look like he was having fun, Sandra.
This is Salvatore Sincere turns into Tom Brandy part 2.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing. It's the same story. It's just self-motivated this time instead of commentary being like, you're not even Salvatore Sincere, you're Tom Brandy, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, Mark Miro, that was against Mark Miro, right? That he, like, called out Salvatore Sincere and was like, you're just Tom Brandy. This is Chaz just being like, I couldn't be Beaver Cleavage. I'm here with my girlfriend, Mariana, who was my mother, weirdly, when I was Beaver Cleavage. Like, I don't know. This whole thing is so dumb that I kind of love it, because it's ridiculous, but I hate storytelling like this. I hate when you're like, I was playing a character, but I just couldn't do it anymore because I needed to be myself. It takes me out of the show. It's stupid.
The problem is, like, I think that storytelling is fine if when they come at the character, they're, like, miles better.
But this is Chaz.
This is Chaz. Like, he is, like, I mean, the most interesting part of this was that he said the words "sisters of love" because that's
I was just gonna
like.
Say he did reference that he was a sister of love, which I appreciated. I still want that shirt.
I mean, look, Sandra, it is a bad day when the only thing that's interesting is the fact that he mentions a gimmick that was terrible that you liked,
and that he did exactly one time or two times. Because weren't they the Sisters of Love in like a vignette, and then they wrestled as the Sisters of Love against the Godwins?
All just baffling shite. You know, like fucking.
And
Chaz.
I like the headbangers too. Like, why is he like, I've been down gimmick road or whatever he said? Didn't he say that? Like, I've been down gimmick road.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just like, that's what wrestling is. Like, I love gimmicks in wrestling. I love characters in wrestling. I don't think that in wrestling you always have to just be yourself. Like, if you're just yourself, you're just a dude. If you're like a character, and like, I've been preparing for our podcast on Chikara that we're recording tomorrow. Yes, it's actually happening on Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes, plug, plug. But like, I'm watching all of these colorful characters and trying to get in the headspace of like explaining Chikara to people. And I'm like, this is why I fell in love with it. You know, like there's a hermit crab and there's a sentient work of art who was created by someone who was forced to wear a mask and be a faceless person and like all this stuff. And I think that there's, you know, there's a place for both in wrestling. There's like a place for characters like Stone Cold Steve Austin, where he is himself turned up to 11. And there's a place for, you know, a wrestling ice cream. And I love it all. And Chaz does not seem to have struck the proper balance here.
Doesn't work for anybody. You know, it's funny. Mick Foley had said in an interview, I think with Lillian Garcia, I think it was on Chasing the Glory. Which, by the way, where interviews come from, very important, Landstorm.
Did he not credit you too?
No, so Meltzer reported, I love Dave, but Dave reported our Paul Heyman clip from YouTube as being from Busted Open Radio. So,
oh, really?
Then Lance Storm just like screenshotted it and was like, can I get an amen? And I'm like, that was from us. So I emailed Dave and said, look, can you change this? And he changed it within like 10 minutes. So no problem. Uh-huh. But like 12 people like tweeted Lance going like, that was from Inside the Ropes. And he didn't tweet anything. So Lance, I mean, I'm just not happy. So, you know, just take that as you will. But Mick Foley was saying in an interview with Lillian Garcia on Chasing the Glory that one of the really cool things about the Attitude Era was that people were allowed to throw shit against the wall. And sometimes mm-hmm. that can be brilliant, and sometimes it can be atrocious, but I am here for seeing the attempt. I love the attempt. Like, I love...
The attempt is great.
I am more than happy to sit and watch Chaz fall on his arse, because for every Chaz that we get, we might get a China. Right? So, like, mm-hmm. that's what you want in wrestling. And that's why, like, it's, you know, Bischoff said before, like, you know, WWE's presentation sometimes is too glossy, you know, too, it's almost too perfect in some ways, the way they put it on the cross. I want to see people fail, because I'll also get to see people succeed that you never thought would be possible. So that's why I hope that we get back to that kind of point in some way if we can.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, like, Chaz might not be the most interesting gimmick, and I don't even really understand what he... I mean, he's just a guy who wants to have fun. Those are a dime a dozen, right? Like, you can see that anywhere. But bless his attempt, I suppose. And, I mean, it's not like Beaver Cleavage was ever going to get him super far in the World Wrestling Federation. So maybe he just thought, maybe I will do better as myself than I will if I have to wear an airplane hat out to the ring. I guess I kind of preferred Beaver Cleavage because it was so shit, but whatever. It's Chaz, and Chaz fights Meat, and so we get Chaz versus Meat, and it's not very good.
No, Meat versus Chaz is... Now, do you think Chaz wrestled better here as Chaz or in the one match that he had as Beaver Cleavage against Christian?
I think he wrestled better as Chaz. He seemed a little bit more like Headbanger Mosh as Chaz than when he was trying to be a child.
Yes, he did. Chaz reminds me of, like, there's like a certain brand of person you get. I'm not going to say American. Where, like, you will speak to somebody on, like, online, right? Or, like, you know, on a social platform, and they're always very funny, and they'll give you, like, good gifts and good memes, and then you meet them in person, it's like there's zero personality that comes out of them in person. And not even like, you know, because you get it with shy people, right? Where people are shy, and then, you know, you start chatting and eventually gets there. But there's some people who just have no personality face-to-face. Chaz is that person. So maybe he would have had a good gift game back in the day if gifts were around.
Maybe he would have had a good gift. Is this your way of telling me that I have no personality face-to-face and I'm just a bore?
I mean, Sondra, there's a lot of things I could say about you, but that's not one of them. Look, you have been dropped off outside our apartment and could not find our apartment, and you were dropped off outside of it. That's not boring.
That is
me.
True.
That will live in infamy for me.
At least it's a fun story, right?
At least. So anyway, so we get this crap match with Chaz and Meat. Chaz wins. Who could possibly care? But we do see...
I mean, I was just happy that we got that match that was promised to us whenever on Raw. I mean, we were supposed to see Beaver Cleavage versus Meat, and we did not get to see it. So at least we got to see it in some form, because goodness knows I was waiting. That's a lie. But
sometimes
whatever.
Promises don't need to be kept. But we did before this. I forgot to mention, I thought it was after, but before. There was a GTV. We saw Test and Stephanie McMahon leaving the Marriott. They shared a kiss as they drove off. Jerry Lawler
cannot contain himself.
He is not happy. He's like, I asked him. And it's like he's going to tell you.
Right? On TV. Why would he be telling Jerry Lawler?
But then the best thing is, just everyone at home, just like, whether you're on a bus right now listening to this, or you're in the bath, which is weird, please stop. Whatever it is that you're doing when you're listening to this, just imagine you're internally, you are an interviewer. And you're going to get the first interview with Test. And you're going to ask him about this. And then see if you think you can do a better job than Terry Taylor. Who... He's so bad at interviewing.
Like, I am not an interviewer, nor do I claim to be. That is not my strength. That is a strength that you have. That is not a strength that I have. I think that I could have done a better job than Terry Taylor here.
I think my mom could have done a better job than Terry Taylor here.
Your mom would have been brilliant. Your mom would be... brilliant interviewing Test. Can you imagine?
So Test, I'm hearing that you're saying you're not pumping Stephanie, but I saw you kissing her outside the car. What's going on? Yeah,
that's
like
exactly
that.
What your mother would say.
Did I tell you the slightly racist thing she said about RuPaul?
No.
Oh, so good. So on RuPaul's Drag Race, which we now watch religiously together, in the finale, every finale, which is in front of a crowd, RuPaul will come out in a you know, an amazing gown, just looks brilliant, right? So And my mom is not racist, so don't tweet me, but you know, she's like someone who's 20 years older, so thinks that the way to word things is this way, which it is not. And so RuPaul's got this like green dress on, and my mom goes, oh, he looks absolutely fabulous, doesn't he? So, yeah, he looks great. She went, you know, it's that lucky that he's a coloured fella, because he looks much better in the green. I said, what?
Oh, Fiona.
You know, if he was pale, he wouldn't look as good in the green, which is true, but I don't know if calling him the coloured fella is the best way to word it. And then there's also
saying like, oh, it's nice that he has a darker complexion that looks good in the green dress.
And there's also a drag queen called Detox who's had a lot of work done to his face, and you know, because and then when he's in drag, he's got very kind of like androgynous looks and stuff. But when he's out of drag, it's a lot. And yeah, she sees him. She goes, "Oh dear God, Detox! I'm going to need a detox for that face." So that's
brilliant.
Watching it with her is just tremendous. Anyway,
I haven't seen Detox yet. Is it like really something?
Season 5. You need to watch season 5.
I'm going to watch season 5.
Five and six.
Like, that's next up. I've been away from watching television for a week.
5 and 6 are tremendous.
I'm so excited. Because like I said, I've watched like Alyssa Edwards' Netflix show. So
oh God, yeah.
Kind of like,
yeah, like
it's horrendous. But
season
I'm
five
kind
is like, there are like so many good queens in that show. There's like, anyway, detouring from the point.
Yes.
So Terry Taylor attempts to ask Tess about it before anything can happen. The Mean Street Posse and Shane just tackle him out of nowhere. They throw him into a Coke machine and just beat him up. So.
Presumably for the honor of Stephanie, which, by the way, Shane McMahon, you orchestrated the kidnapping and potential rape of your sister, and
now you're upset that she's
on a consensual date?
That was his dad, not him.
No. Shane McMahon did it under the watchful eye of the greater power, but Shane McMahon was completely complicit before he knew it was his dad.
Yeah, but like, you know what they say. It's okay for someone to rape and pillage your sister, but just not for a wrestler to date her.
Consensually.
Baffling. Shaking my head.
I don't understand. Shane McMahon has turned into like Ken Shamrock being overprotective of Ryan, except for Ken Shamrock didn't sell his actual sister to the devil. My head is gonna explode with all of this. Ah, it drives me insane. Stephanie should be able to pump Tess if she wants.
She does.
Good.
I'm Marriott. I love that they were like calling the Marriott a motel. I'm like, do you know how much it is to stay at a Marriott?
Right.
Like, it's like, anyway. Up next, one of the guys who becomes at this point one of my favorites on Retro Rose, Hardcore Holly. Hardcore Holly is shit, right? But he's like so shit at so many things that like now I really like him. Like he keeps calling himself the Big Shot, and like who cares? But he's so bland in his delivery that I kind of love him.
See, that's kind of how I feel about Steve Blackman, to be honest. I just miss Bob Holly's vroom vroom noises.
That is true. Well, he gets a cousin soon, which you'll be happy about.
I'm excited about Crash.
Hardcore Holly comes out. He says that he wants Kane to get his big, red, diapered ass down here. Because apparently Kane wears a diaper.
Kane does not wear a diaper.
He does not.
Kane wears spandex. We would be able to see diaper lines. Because we can see the singlet lines on Kane's outfit,
Sandra,
which always bothers
trash
me.
Talk? Get with the program. Hardcore Holly gets a little bit of offense in before Kane ultimately is about to murder him. Then Big Show comes down, choke slams Kane, and Hardcore Holly gets the win. My favorite part is Hardcore Holly gets the win by just putting his foot on Kane's chest. It is so good because he's the Big Shot and he just beats Kane with ease with the help of a giant
choke slamming him again. Though it's like, it's Kane going down to one choke slam, like, okay, it's Kane. Like, he should be above going down to one choke slam.
But luckily,
he should be able to kick out.
Luckily, Hardcore Holly, being the Big Shot, can't just win and get this medical victory over Kane. He has to stand over Kane and try and taunt him. And Kane gets up and choke slams him. Not one time, not two times, not three times, but 4 times. Hardcore Holly has passed on.
R.I.P. Hardcore Holly. I'd say you're in our thoughts and prayers, but I don't like you very much.
And also, if he died for real life, that would be really bad. So, yeah.
Yeah,
This worked for me, though. It was fun. I mean, I've kind of just accepted that Kane is now more of a regular character, so he's now not going to be someone who takes a lot of punishment to get down. But I don't know. I enjoy this for what it was. I mean, it is leading to Kane versus Big Show, which I'm not thrilled about. But apart from that, I liked it.
Yeah, I'm not that thrilled with the Big Show-Kane feud just because, I don't know, like, Big Show versus Kane just brings to mind an overwhelming sense of dread for me. And I'm not as into Hardcore Holly as you are. I mean, it's fine. Like, I don't mind him, I guess, but I can't say that I'm, you know, loving what he's doing. And also, I'm just not a big fan of the R word being used on television. And I know that that's something that happens all the time in 1999, but I just don't really like it at all.
That's fair.
It was cathartic to see Kane batter him, though.
Rock has the microphone backstage. He's talking about how last night the Rock, the world saw him beating The Undertaker twice, but Undertaker... he talks about how Undertaker woke up with a tattoo in his head, and the tattoo was... What was he said? It was something about the tattoo, and then he was going to serve him up a Rock burger with cheese and a nice drink of monkey piss. And the thing is, like, you can tell the Rock...
I don't know, he talks a lot, and I don't really listen.
The Rock is so over that he says things that make no sense.
None whatsoever.
It is gibberish.
But he just says them in a charismatic way. It's almost like when you're talking to a dog or a small child and you know that they can't really understand what you're saying, but you just say it in a tone that sounds soothing. The Rock says whatever he says in a tone that sounds charismatic.
Yeah. He basically says here to The Undertaker what I say to Hulk in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, handsome prince. How are you today? That kind of thing. Look, my dog is a golden prince, angel bear sent from heaven. Just deal with it.
It's true.
So,
I did enjoy the video on your Instagram quite a lot.
Oh yeah. So I went to the pet shop and saw this. I was genuinely horrified. It was like a cow's ear, but with the hair still on. I was not.
Why is the hair still on it?
So I asked the question. Excuse me. I was like, look, I come in here a lot and I buy him, you know, his meat treats. But why the fuck is there a cow's ear with hair still on it? And they were like, well, there's actually like studies and stuff that helps dogs. And I'm like, how the fuck does that help dogs? Apparently when they're eating the ear, the hair kind of like helps with their teeth, like kind of getting stuff out of their teeth. And then this is disgusting, by the way, so feel free to balk. When they eat the ear with the hair on it, apparently when the hair sort of goes through their system, any parasites will cling to the hair. So it's a way to kind of get toxins out of their system.
Oh, okay. So, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I attempted, in the honor of Steve Gunn, I thought, well, Steve Gunn's a vegetarian. Maybe Hulk will show him solidarity. He did not.
He did not. Not whatsoever.
He just loves meat. Just like his dad. Up next we get...
Is Sean Stasiak his favorite wrestler?
I can't even have him on the TV. Hulk just starts doing zoomies. Can't handle it.
Good thing he's only on Heat then. Although you have to watch Heat, so
I do. I watch it alone. Problem. Hulk doesn't get to watch Heat. He gets too excited. Anyway, so then up next we get Rock versus Triple H, which makes sense because Triple H cost the match last night. They have a pretty average match, nothing special. Rock's kind of getting the upper hand.
It was a match.
Yeah, it was a match.
It happened.
Rock was pounding away in Triple H when Mr. Ass comes out, knocks out Rock with a club. Mr. Ass costs Rock the match. What did you make of it? Any thoughts?
It's one of those things where, like, you can see that they're building to Mr. Ass versus The Rock as a program, right? And that sounds fine in theory. Like, unfortunately, I've seen clips of the Mr. Ass versus Rock program, and I'm not exactly looking forward to the Mr. Ass versus Rock program.
Wonder
so I'm
why.
Trying to watch this without that in my mind, but it's very difficult to
do that. Can I just ask,
that.
Though, how, like, I'm very curious as to how this got into your ether. Because, like...
I don't know. I think it's when people discuss The Rock always being willing to put people over, because he did lose quite a lot, right? Because, like, everyone... Most people love The Rock. I am not the biggest fan of The Rock, right?
I do want to say, sometimes I think that your bias can overshadow things. But I think with The Rock that you have been fairer. Like,
yeah, I've been trying really hard.
I said in the King of the Ring podcast, I think sometimes Undertaker does things that if somebody else did it, you'd love it. Because it's him, you don't like it. But I think with The Rock, you've managed to be very fair in how you assess him. So I'm trying to give you some props here.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I've tried to be very unbiased toward The Undertaker and The Rock. And I think the difference between The Undertaker and The Rock in the year of our Lord 1999 is that The Rock was charismatic and good, and The Undertaker was less charismatic and good than The Rock in 1999. So some of the things The Rock is doing works for me, right? Like, and the crowd is behind him, and I can kind of see why. And he hasn't been a cretin to anyone in a while, so it's easy to forget that. I just know that that's coming, so it's difficult. I don't know why this came across my, you know, wrestling historical knowledge, but I think it was just kind of a classic example of trying to make a main event star and then burying it yourself. I think it was like an example, like The Rock just doesn't do Billy Gunn any favors in their feud. And so I've seen clips of it and stuff. I don't know why I know this, but I know this from years back. I learned of this program. And so, yeah, like it's hard for me to kind of judge this objectively because I'm not excited for where this goes. Because I would like for Billy Gunn to be made into a bigger star. And I would like for him to be kind of a main event guy because I think he is quite good. But I don't know. I guess like the execution on the show is fine. I can see what they're building to.
Then we go from that to The Godfather versus Edge. Edge coming out to his own music. Draws and Albert come out to continue to be the least interesting act on the show in a show that includes Chaz. So,
really, are they less interesting to you than Steve Blackman even?
Yes.
Wow.
Because Steve Blackman is involved with Ken Shamrock, who I love. Ergo,
yes,
there is interest.
Draws, I mean, I'm not saying that you're wrong. Draws and Albert are not very interesting.
So
they always want to tattoo or pierce someone.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
So they come out, they're trying to distract the hose. Edge ends up beating Godfather with a spear, and then Godfather's tied up in the ropes and the hose are trying to save him, and I can't describe how much physically I don't want to watch this. Like, Draws and Albert get one of the hose and like stretch her tongue as if they're about to pierce it. I was going to be sick. And Edge comes in to help, and the hoe in question hugs Edge. Godfather essentially then, by Luke's purpose, essentially says, "Edge, you have saved this lady from unconsensual piercing. So you may have an evening of pleasure with said lady, as that is what she desires." A transaction takes place. The Gangrel is in the crowd. He does not look happy. "I would like you to unpack this for me, please, Sandra."
I will say there is some internal consistency as to why Draws and Prince Albert came out after The Godfather, which took me a little bit to get. But then I remembered that Val Venus and The Godfather are in an alliance. So, like, I don't know, have Draws and Prince Albert interacted with The Godfather specifically before, or has it always just been Val Venus up to this point?
I want to say that Godfather at some point either was with Val Venus or was...
Did he save Val Venus?
Yeah, I think he saved him one time. I'm sure there was something that was a save.
Okay, because The Godfather and Val Venus are, like, in an alliance of sexy men or whatever, because that's their thing. So at least there is some sort of consistency with why Draws and Prince Albert are out here trying to go after The Godfather. That's the biggest compliment I can give this, other than, like, Edge is involved and Edge is great and I love him. But, yeah, like, this is not really the story for me. Like, I want to pierce you and do things to your body non-consensually. That's not a great thing to do. At least they're the heels, I suppose. But, like, none of this is really for me. It was nice to see Edge being valiant and saving a lady. And if she wants to go away with him, fine. They could have fun. But Gangrel being in the crowd watching, though, was interesting to me. Like, him standing up there, the way that Edge used to brood in the crowd, right? Like, kind of a callback to that. And Gangrel's just, like, standing there in the crowd going, like, I have teeth and I am upset about the proceedings here. Because Edge is being more of a human. Like, he's being more of an actual person than a brood member.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny.
So I think that's the interesting part of the story to me. The rest of it I can just leave.
Yeah, it doesn't really interest me. I'm a bit bored of it. So just to change topic for 1 second. So BBC Sport tweeted out about 5 minutes ago, "Andy Murray has confirmed he will play mixed doubles with Serena Williams at Wimbledon." And then Robert has retweeted it and tagged Becky Lynch as Seth Rollins. And it's my favourite thing. So up next we get Mr. Ass versus Bradshaw for custody of one of the tag title belts. This wasn't bad. And it involved Bradshaw.
Fine.
Like, I feel like Bradshaw has been getting better when he's in the ring with people who can go, like Billy Gunn or whatever. And Farouk ends up getting on the apron. Billy Gunn then shows him his ass.
Mm-hmm. He moons Farouk, and Farouk is affronted.
So Farouk then swings the belt and hits Bradshaw. X-Pac runs down, blindsides Billy Gunn. He turns up the clothesline from hell and is pinned. The fans are going crazy for it. China runs down, attacks X-Pac, but Road Dogg comes down, clears her and Billy Gunn out the ring. Like, the match was decent, and I thought the angle at the end was really, really good. So, yeah, I'm kind of all in on the DX versus DX thing. How did this work for you? Because I know in theory, this shouldn't really work for you because it's DX, 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 and Bradshaw. How did this work out for you?
DX, 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 and Bradshaw is on paper something that should really make me want to switch off. But I did, yeah, I enjoyed it fine. Like, the match, I don't know if it blew me away or anything, but it wasn't something that I thought, wow, this is horrendous, I need to leave what I'm watching right now. So that's a compliment. Yeah, the shenanigans and stuff at the end, I think part of the issue with this is that the story makes no sense, right? Like, Billy Gunn having custody of one of the title belts and Bradshaw wanting it. And whose side am I really supposed to be on when Billy Gunn is a dastardly, dastardly baddie and Bradshaw is a dastardly, dastardly baddie and also is Bradshaw? So, like, I'm not really supposed to be on either of their sides. So I don't really want either of them to be the tag team champions. But then, like, when X-Pac gets involved, like, I want X-Pac to be part of things. I want X-Pac to have glory. I want X-Pac to get one up on dastardly, dastardly Mr. Ass, who beat him in the King of the Ring final by exploiting his neck injury and all that kind of stuff. So that interplay works for me. Like, I really like the X-Pac versus Billy Gunn dynamic. And yeah, like you said, I mean, the match wasn't bad and all of the shenanigans at the end were fun. Like, I just kind of wish the Acolytes weren't a part of it. I wish that they weren't the tag team champions. I wish we had tag team champions that didn't make me want to switch off the television. But all in all, I mean, the DX versus DX stuff is actually working for me a lot better than I expected it to.
Yeah, I think the storytelling is pretty tight, pretty solid. So I think it works. And they built to something that the fans wanted. You know, X-Pac ended up, after all the stuff that Billy Gunn's done to him, he costs Billy Gunn the thing that he wants, which is the tag title. So it makes sense. Up next comes a duo that I wish we'd got for longer, but it's Ivory and Nicole Bass, the new Sean and Diesel, ladies and gentlemen.
They're great together.
Yeah, they're really good. She talks about being the real champion. She's not just a Barbie doll. There's no real challenger, so she could do something different. She's the champ. And, you know, she's going to give somebody a title, a shot. There's a girl, She brags about how, you know, she's the champion. There's nobody around that can touch her. A girl then hops the railing. Security is going to take her away, but Ivory wants her to stay. The girl's quite scared, which, I mean, why did she jump the railing then? But anyway, Ivory's like, oh no, you can stay. You don't need to leave. And then just clocks her one. Then
did
the girl...
you notice the line that Ivory said here?
No.
It's all fake anyway, sweetheart. It's fine.
Oh yeah. It's all fake anyway. Yeah.
What
I did line.
Not like that.
Cornette must be just like self-harming in the back,
right.
Then the girl like tackles Ivory, but then Nicole Bass grabs her, power bombs her. Ivory acts like she's going to help the girl, but then just clotheslines her and pulls her hair. The security guard holds Ivory back. So I guess, you know, the idea of this is just that Ivory and Nicole Bass are big old baddies. I love Ivory as women's champion, so I'm just never gonna have a bad thing to say about her. What did you think?
I love Ivory as women's champion, too. I wish she hadn't said the, like, it's fake anyway, da-da-da. Like, I wish she would have played it a little bit more straight. Like, it's fine, you have a chance, you know, that kind of thing. But overall, Ivory just being a dick to this woman. Do we know who this woman is?
She was just a plant.
Well, but... I mean, she was a plant, but, like, she had to be a wrestler, right? She took bumps.
Keep talking, and I will come back to you. I'll try to figure
okay.
it out.
So, I mean, the whole segment, I like Ivory as women's champion so much more than I like Deborah as women's champion. Like, I cannot explain to you how happy I am that Ivory is women's champion. And I love that Ivory's getting some time to talk on the mic as well, because she's very good at it, as we see here, right? Like, she comes across as coherent. She comes across as a character. Yeah, she's a prick. And she's saying that she has no competition, which isn't entirely a lie. Like, who else is even on the roster right now that can wrestle her? Because there's Jacqueline, who's a wrestler. Tori purports to be a wrestler, but we have not seen evidence of this. Who else is around? Because Molly Holly's not on the roster yet.
No, there's not really any. So the woman in question is Malia Hosaka. She signed a developmental deal with WWF in 1999. She did this, and then she ended up... what else did she do? She apparently at one point she comes out with Taka Michinoku. Later on,
okay.
She was kept under contract for a year. Just before her contract expired, she was due to come up with Essay Rios in a role that was eventually given to Lita. And then
I was
going to
say the Lita thing.
Yeah, so then she was let go. So I don't think she's wrestled. She retired in 2012. She also did some stuff in WCW before. So yeah, that's who she is.
Cool. So I was just curious. But yeah, I mean, I like Ivory kind of establishing herself as a little bit more of a character, because up until this point, we've really seen her just as like the valet to Mark Henry and D'Lo Brown. And I like that Ivory is a person of her own making now, and she has her own bodyguard in Nicole Bass. And I still like, I think the Ivory and Nicole Bass partnership is great. And I know that it doesn't last very long, which is a bummer, but I like it. Like, I like Nicole Bass just kind of being the big brute behind her. And, you know, I mean, you say it's like Sean and Diesel. The thing is, when people reference Sean and Diesel, like, I haven't seen any of the Sean and Diesel stuff. So, like, I know of it. I know what the dynamic is. But if it's like Ivory and Nicole Bass, then I'm into it.
Well, yeah, I mean, the idea of Sean and Diesel was the green guy who came in to be the bodyguard because you can get over just with the big spots. And then Michaels was the workhorse. So, yeah, I mean,
Like Triple H in China, kind of.
kind of the same thing. So then we get Michael Cole's with Vince. Vince is not worried about tonight as he took the heart out of Austin and he just basically tells Michael Cole to fuck off. Jeff Jarrett then grabs Deborah because she's doing her makeup and he's tired of her time getting wasted. Maybe the beginning of a story there. He comes out to face X-Pac for the Intercontinental Championship. They have a really good match because they're both really good. And then X-Pac seems to maybe be getting the upper hand. Is he going to become the Intercontinental Champion? But here comes Mr. Ass to because Deborah comes up and tries to take off her blouse. It backfires. Jarrett's hit with a guitar. But then as Deborah's distracting the referee, Billy Gunn hits the Famouser. Jarrett is able to just get his arm over X-Pac and get the win. Road Dogg and China come out, we got a big brawl. So lots going on. I know sometimes lots of shenanigans stuff either can work for you or work against you. What was it in this instance and why?
This was a perfect blend of shenanigans. I loved this. I think it helps that I really like Jeff Jarrett and I really like X-Pac. So I wanted X-Pac to win the Intercontinental Championship because he might be my favorite person on Retro Raw right now. Like, I just kind of keep coming back to how I like Valiant X-Pac, which again, like, I'm very interested into when this whole concept of X-Pac heat starts to be a thing, because right now he's just my fave.
I want to like replay his first night when you were like, "Who is this guy?"
I
Like,
hated him. And I
let's
think
rip some
that's kind of
ass.
I hated him so much. And anytime he would get on the microphone and speak, up until when did I start liking X-Pac? It's only been in the past few months, right?
No, you no, because no, because you started liking him when he had the matches with D'Lo in the summer of '98. This let
Okay.
you began to like him,
I
and then
liked
as.
him when he was in the ring, but then every time he would talk, I wanted him to go away.
But in the end, then he would talk less and less. And then the X-Pac and Shane program, you liked him. So I think it's been a
I think
gradual.
it's really been since like X-Pac and Shane, and then like the X-Pac and Kane stuff obviously was just right up my alley. So
That's
now
when you
X-Pac's
fully fell in
basically
love
my
with him.
fave. That's when I fully fell in love with him, was X-Pac and Kane. So now I am fully aboard the X-Pac train. I am a big, big old fan of X-Pac, and I wanted him to win the Intercontinental Championship from Dastardly Dastardly Jeff Jarrett, because Jeff Jarrett is a dastardly baddie who seems to be kind of trying to control Deborah a little more than I like. But I mean, the two of them are very good wrestlers, so they have great chemistry in the ring. I like watching them wrestle. Wrestling's not always the focus of Retro Raw, but when we get really good matches, I try to appreciate them because we don't get them very often. Although we're seeing more and more of it now that more like actual like wrestlers are on the show. So that was pleasant. And the shenanigans at the end, it was cool because, you know, X-Pac hits Jeff Jarrett with the guitar behind the referee's back, and you think, yes, like maybe my guy is going to win and triumph. And it doesn't even seem like a dick move because Deborah tried to distract the ref first, and it was kind of them, you know, being hoisted by their own petard, right? Like they were, you know, fallen to their own tricks. And it felt like it was going to be this big moment of triumph, but then Dastardly Dastardly Mr. Ass has to come in and ruin all of our fun, and the match ends in heartbreak. And it made me feel things. And that's what I want from my wrestling. And Jeff Jarrett still being Intercontinental Champion is fine. X-Pac's still in the story with Mr. Ass and with, you know, DX versus DX, which is a story I like. So I don't know. I thought this was kind of the perfect blend of shenanigans. Like one shenanigan more may have been too many, but this was perfect.
This is like classic good Attitude Era style stuff when they do loads of shenanigans, but all the shenanigans kind of make sense within the parameters of the stories of who's
And
involved.
there's a reason for all of it. Like I can explain to you why each shenanigan happened.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's kind of what I want, you know?
None of it's like forced or swerve for swerve type sake, which happens sometimes. They managed to get in here. The story of Jeff Jarrett and Deborah and him being kind of annoyed with her taking too long in the makeup chair, to leading to X-Pac going for the gold, to leading to Billy Gunn coming out to get revenge on X-Pac for earlier on, to leading out to Road Dogg and China coming out to further the feud that they set up in the promo with Triple H. So there's loads of elements and they all kind of make sense. So
And it all feels very fully formed world too, which is what I like, because it does feel like all of the moving parts kind of fit together in the same universe.
Yes. So it is main event time. Steve Austin managed to get his WWF title shot in his last edict as CEO. So him and Undertaker have this like 10-minute match. It kind of gets going towards the end. The fans are really behind Austin here. They really want him to win. And in the end, it gets a little bit sluggy because Undertaker just... You can tell he's really kind of struggling now. Like, he's just not able to... You must even... Like, even your dislike of him, he is not able to get through stuff like he used to.
Like I said, I'm really trying to be objective, but it's hard to enjoy Undertaker matches. And I think part of that is that he is not able to do some of the stuff he used to be able to do.
He's working injured here, and it's quite clear that he's working injured.
Yeah, and like that's not even necessarily his fault, because like I'm sure that they're like, hey, if you can work, then we could really use you, brother.
Also, you're not gonna, if you can get by and it's like, okay, you're gonna be the world champion, you're gonna be in the main event. Like, that's not the time. You know, the old style would be you work through the main event stuff and then you take some time off. So
yeah, exactly. I'm not even trying to like disparage him. I know that I'm not the biggest fan of him, but like his matches just haven't been very good. Like, I enjoyed this more than I enjoyed him versus The Rock, because I think he and Austin have better chemistry for whatever reason, but it still wasn't like a great match.
Well, there's also the thing that I think that carried this more than the actual in-ring wrestling was the crowd and the idea that everybody was so desperate for Austin to win the title back. I was curious because did you know Austin was going to win the title back here? What was your reaction when he did? Because basically he wins the title with Stunner. You did, okay.
Yes, because I saw like... The unfortunate part about watching Retro Raw is that when you go to the WWE Network, you have to scroll past all of the other episodes to get to the episode you need to see. And I always try really hard not to look at the screen caps, but one of the screen caps for an episode like pretty soon in the future is like Austin as champion. And so I was like, okay, he wins the title back at some point soon. And then when I heard it was Austin versus The Undertaker, like, I didn't know 100% that this is when he won it back, but I was pretty sure.
I was going to ask you,
when he won it back.
I don't know if this is... See if we were, and this is a genuine question, if I was to go on my network and go to a certain episode and then, like, copy the link and paste it, would it just bring the episode up so you could avoid having to go through the things? Maybe that's something we should try.
Might, but then I would have to watch it on my computer, which would be annoying.
How do you watch it?
On my Fire Stick.
Okay, well, it was just an attempt.
I mean, I watched this episode on my phone because I was away, but you still kind of have to like scroll through him and stuff. And you know what? I mean, it's fine. Like, I figured that he was going to win the title. It was still exciting. It was still exciting for him to win the title back. I still was very happy that he won the title back, because that means Stone Cold Steve Austin is the World Wrestling Federation champion and The Undertaker is no longer. So it was still a moment of joy for me. Like, I am very pleased that Stone Cold Steve Austin is the champion. And of course, the McMahons are not happy that he is represented. So the whole greater power thing is really the biggest, like, not only does it not make any sense, it's also just complete failure, right?
Yes. I was going to try and think of a really long, you know, good answer for that, but no, the answer is yes.
It's just terrible, like the whole entire thing.
What's kind of interesting is that, you know, so the McMahons win at King of the Ring, right? That should be the kind of whole So we only have a month left of corporate ministry, and then it's disbanded forever. The whole thing
really?
Is gone. Like, we are not far away from the end.
Okay.
And what's interesting is that I don't know if they figured out that it was needed to end or whatever, but like, it's just funny to me that when they, you know, they win and the whole story is, you know, they got together and they won and they were able to defeat Austin, and we have like a month of it left. So we'll watch that play out and kind of talk about it as it goes. But Austin gets the win, he regains the belt, then he just decks Paul Bearer, which is obviously great. He's celebrating, and then Undertaker ends up recovering, hits him with the belt, then Austin gets some blood, and Austin tries to fight back, but he's getting pummeled by the Undertaker. So they're kind of keeping the program going, I guess, to give Undertaker's rematch. But I mean, I guess going in, was the match better or just as you thought, or not as good as you thought it was going to be from it being advertised at the top of the show?
I mean, it was fine, I think, and that's about what I expected it to be, because I expected to enjoy it more than... For some reason, Undertaker and Rock just do not work for me. Like, they don't work for anybody, so I don't feel like that's just my, you know, bias showing, because, like, I've enjoyed some of the stuff that The Rock does, and there's that. But yeah, like Undertaker and Austin, it wasn't bad. And I think being behind Stone Cold Steve Austin again and kind of really wanting him to win helps a lot, because I'm not as behind The Rock as I am going to be behind Stone Cold Steve Austin. So even though it is a lot of punching and kicking and The Undertaker's really slow and it's not necessarily fantastic, there is more of an atmosphere to Undertaker Austin. And then having Austin win in the end meant that we got that moment of triumph. So the end was good. The match wasn't like 20 minutes. It was what, 10? How long was this match?
Just over 10 minutes.
So, I mean, that's significantly better than The Undertaker versus The Rock, right? Because that was like forever. Well, I felt like I aged significantly.
This was kind of the right amount of time. You know, like it built to what it needed to be. And, you know, we're not going to be sitting at the end of this year going, of the best matches of 1999, Undertaker versus Austin. But, you know, what I remember about wrestling, I've said this before, is that I don't really remember, like, specific match stuff. I remember bits of time that are memorable to me. And Austin getting the win the night after the McMahons beat him is something I always remember. So I remember that he won, which I guess is a testament to the fact that they did the right thing, because I'm able to remember it 20 years later, even if we weren't talking about it week to week.
Yeah, and I think in storyline and in the context of time, it works really well, because that's kind of what we wanted and we got it. But, you know, WWF isn't giving us everything we wanted. You know, it's not just all happy endings here. They are keeping a narrative going. So, yeah, like in the end, it worked for me fine. It's not a match I'll ever rewatch, but that's fine. It also didn't kill my soul as I was watching it, which I appreciated.
Okay, so overall, where would your thumb be for this episode of Monday Night Raw and why?
This is a thumbs up episode of Monday Night Raw, and I'm really happy about that, because leading up to King of the Ring, I was not all that into Retro Raw, because I think a lot of the storytelling just kind of like fell off a cliff for a while and it wasn't great. I think that between Over the Edge and King of the Ring was rough, like really rough. And it seems like we're kind of getting back on track. Things seem to have evened out a little bit more. We have some new stories going forward. Ivory is women's champion. I'm a big fan of Jeff Jarrett and X-Pac was a great match. I'm a lot more into the DX stuff than I thought I was going to be, which is pleasant, because that's a big part of the show. It seemed like some of the authority shenanigans were almost toned down a little in this episode. They were still very present, right? Like it was still very like corporate ministry versus Stone Cold Steve Austin, but I guess Vince and Shane weren't all over the show Vince and Shaning the way that they sometimes do. So yeah, I mean, even the bad stuff like Chaz versus Meat wasn't that egregious, and it kind of just makes me laugh as a concept. So I liked this episode of Raw. I enjoyed watching it. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was a thumbs up episode. I thought they followed up the pay-per-view stuff pretty well. And yeah, the DX stuff really works for me a lot. I thought the through line of Austin thwarting the McMahons, it's kind of what you want in wrestling. Like you want the heels to get to the dastardly heels to get their way, and then you want the babyface to somehow overcome it. But that's kind of what wrestling is. So I think they did the point their way with that. Hardcore Holly, I just adore for how much of a big shot he is. So yeah,
I love how he's like, you missed with the car and stuff to the Big Show. I can't say that, like, you know, Hardcore Holly and the Big Show is the most compelling program, or Kane versus the Big Show or anything like that. But it is what it is.
So next week we are going to be covering the July 5th episode where the Acolytes defend the tag titles against the Hardy Boys, the Al Snow defends his hardcore title against D'Lo Brown, Jeff Jarrett defends his IC title against Chaz.
Why?
He got a win over Meat, why not?
If that's all it takes to get an IC title shot, it's just to beat Meat.
To beat Meat.
As I said it, I was like, that sounded funny.
Also, I should say that Harvey Whippleman on, I think it was the Shotgun that was taped at this show, is doing his heel referee gimmick, where he was trying to help the Brooklyn Brawler win the hardcore title from Al Snow, but he was not successful.
Wow.
There is also some chat about some media appearances from Hogan, Sable, and Vince, but I'm going to save them for next week because I really need to pee. So,
fair.
Sandra, what are the plugs?
Okay, find me on Twitter at Sandra Ruth RW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes to hear us talk King of the Ring 1999, along with all the other bonus content Kenny mentioned at the top of the show. InsideTheRopes.co.uk for tickets to live events. Tickets for Awesome Kong are on sale now. More to be announced soon, I believe. And youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for interview content. There's a really great clip of Paul Heyman that just went up talking about how general manager roles are played out on television. And I could not agree with him more. And I just love him so much. So I think that's all the plugs. And I think we should listen to the Big Boss Man's theme now so you can go pee.
If you ever go down to Cobb County, Georgia, you might find yourself in for a hard time. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye.
Such a tune. Bye.
If you were ever careful.